Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Ever feel like you're lost in endless distraction or like you've been stuck repeating the same problems over and over? That may be a signal that it's time for you to embark on a path of self-evolution. Anyone can hack their brain to reduce suffering, overcome fear, and release the power of the here and now, according to the book we'll be discussing today, which taps into your unique human capacity for accessing meaning, presence, and wisdom through journaling, reflection, and practice to help you discover the wonder and stillness of presence that exists for you. Our guest today is Donald Altman, author of the book Reflect, Awaken to the Wisdom of the Here and Now. Donald is a psychotherapist, an award-winning author, and a former Buddhist monk, featured in The Mindfulness Movie and profiled in The Living Spiritual Teachers Project. He has written over 15 books that teach how to incorporate mindfulness into daily life. Award-winning books include The Mindfulness Toolbox, winner of two gold IBPA Benjamin Franklin Awards as the best book in the psychology and body-mind-spirit categories, Clearing Emotional Clutter, named one of the best spiritual books of 2016, and The Mindfulness Code, named one of the best spiritual books of 2010. Donald has served the community for many years as past vice president of the Center for Mindful Eating and having been an adjunct professor in the Interpersonal Neurobiology Program at Portland State University. As a national speaker for the Professional Education Systems Institute, Donald has trained thousands of mental health professionals on changing the brain through mindfulness practices. Hello, Donald, and welcome to the Pathways.
Oh, hello, Paul. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you back. We've had you on before, and you keep cranking out these wonderful works. And we just can't resist having you around. But let's start about...
I'm honored.
I want to start by asking about the structure of your latest book, Reflect, which is rather unusual. And so describe that and how readers will use it.
Well, it is a different kind of a book. And it's, I think that for, we need a new kind of mindfulness practice for the 21st century because we're so much on the go. Our minds are going, we're distracted in so many ways that we don't have time. And sometimes maybe just not the inclination to sit for longer periods of time. So this book is very unusual. It's got 108 readings. And so these are 108 meditations that are kind of meditations on the go. So you would look at one of these readings, and they're all one page long. And then there are reflections. And so throughout the day, you'd reflect inwardly. And that's using a capacity that is very uniquely human, the ability to reflect inward. And it's really something that I think we're in danger of losing, actually, because our attention is so fragmented.
Right.
So I think it's a beautiful thing that we can reflect, and I even use it that way myself. So I'll take one reading, and throughout the day I'll just pause, and I'll just reflect. And it brings me back. The original word for mindfulness is sati, S-A-T-I, which means self-recollection, self-remembrance. And so this is really a way of bringing our fragmented parts of ourself back together and regaining our wholeness. And that's why I wrote the book the way that I did.
Now, the number 108 has some spiritual significance, right?
Yeah, well, the rosary is and the mala are 108 beads, and they're thought, I think, also to be 108 different, I think it's chakra points.
I see. I didn't know that.
I'm not 100% sure on that, but I do know that the rosary and the mala are 108 beads, and I think there is a significance that goes back into why they developed that number.
Uh-huh. And you took that number from that.
I took that number from that, yeah.
Right, right. Now, you point out in the intro to the book how the mind is subject to so much fear and uncertainty. I mean, things change, they grow, then they decay. And one wonders, how can we not be overwhelmed?
Well, and that's why, I guess why I started with simplicity and peace in the book, which is how can we bring simplicity and peace into our own mind? When you think about the confusion that we often can be confronted with in our minds with so many ideas, and the average person, I'd like to even ask your audience for a moment, to ask themselves this question, have you counted the number of thoughts you had today? And literally, we know from science that there's scientists have said there's between 25 thoughts per second to 125 thoughts per second. Now, the Buddha thought we could have 3,000 thought moments per second.
Wow.
But if you take the low range of 25 thoughts per second and multiplied it out for the course of the day, and I've done that, it's about 75,000 thoughts a day. Now, how many of those thoughts tell you something really profound about who you are? Right? But many of our thoughts are just conditioned thoughts, toxic thoughts, habitual thoughts that really don't really add much value in our life. But yet, the danger is that we grab onto them or we identify with them, and that pulls us in different directions. And so the idea of bringing simplicity is to start to notice and change your relationship to those thoughts and to cultivate a garden of mindfulness.
Do you get to a place where you have less thoughts? I mean, nobody can process 25 thoughts a second.
Right, and that's why I think we feel overwhelmed by our thoughts. Right, and so we need to learn how to just notice our thoughts in a new way. In fact, I think with the first meditation in this book, in fact, if you look at it, is about noticing our thoughts and finding a little peace with our thoughts.
Right. So, is the practice of simplicity and peace that you're teaching, does it actually reduce the thoughts, or does it just reduce their importance?
I think it reduces their importance, mm-hmm. and allows you to see the true nature of them, to kind of see through them, mm-hmm. right? So that you don't have to take them as factual, for example. And you can know, too, that you don't need to try to hold on to thoughts. That thoughts are kind of like, they're just generated all the time. We have a mind stream, and it's all these thoughts. Imagine all the thoughts and emotions we have like a river flowing out to the ocean. And how can you can't hold on to a river? Try it. And the same way, it's not beneficial to try to hold on to our thoughts. And so it changes. If you can have simplicity inside, that'll change how you can have more simplicity in your life. You're decluttering your mind, and then you can start to declutter your life. And you think about, how can I bring more simplicity, more ease into my life, and stop fighting with these thoughts? You know, how can I make my mind my friend, basically, is what we're talking about.
I think it's so important to differentiate between different types of information, different types of thoughts. You know, like there's opinions, there's stories, and there's facts. So we are dwelling a lot in the realm of, we have so much information coming at us, but most of it is not factual. It's just an interpretation, or somebody's
right.
interpretation.
Or somebody's interpretation, or even we make interpretations of facts in our own life.
Right.
I worked with a man who had lost his business. And he was, you know, he was really frightened about moving forward. And he had in his mind, he came in to see me. I remember he said, I don't interview well. I mean, is that a fact, or was that really just his interpretation
exactly.
of things?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we can't really trust our thoughts.
Right. I think we need to reappraise them. And to do that, you do have to reflect inwardly and to see, you know, how accurate is this thought? Is this thought drawing upon maybe a knotted history of things that have happened to me in the past, and so I'm interpreting them in such a way that's really not accurate?
You know, there's some people I've met that seem to be pretty good at turning off their thinking mechanism when they want to.
Hmm.
I'm not one of them. You know, I am a ruminator. I tend to dwell on thoughts. I tend to think about them and turn them over in my mind and turn them into a problem to be solved. And then I'm thinking about how to solve a problem. And a lot of these problems are not solvable.
Mm.
You know, like I can stay up late at night and worry about big problems like climate change and stuff like that.
Right, right.
But that's not productive. That's not helping me.
Right.
And it's not helpful. So, you know, what advice do you have for chronic ruminators? Is there a cure for this?
Well, yeah, actually there is. And that again is part of looking inward and starting to understand and noticing when you are not in the here and now. So rumination is a wonderful example of when I'm not right here, right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm in another place. Recently, I know somebody had a younger gentleman had a car accident, and he was totally in his mind of thoughts, and he didn't see that the car in front of him had stopped. Boom, accident. So most of the accidents that happen in our lives are because we're not right here, right now. Even returning vets from Vietnam, for example, they will tend to ruminate on things that happened to them when they, you know, when they were out in combat or whatever. But we're learning now that we can get them to voluntarily, volitionally move their attention back to the present moment. And you look around you and you say, oh, wait, everything's good. I'm safe, right? I'm seated right now in a comfortable chair. I'm talking with somebody I know, and it's, and there are, nature is outside here. I've entered this moment. It's like, walking through, a threshold into this beautiful virtual reality that is here and now.
Right. You know, speaking of virtual reality, you said in your book, the greatest virtual reality instrument ever created is the human brain.
That, I believe that is actually absolutely true. Human awareness technology has never been surpassed. And it is really the root of what all our science comes from human, the human mind, all our observing of science, all the virtual reality that we create is really pales compared to what we naturally are inborn with, our natural, innate natural birthright of awareness, which is so incredible.
Now you're talking about our imagination, our ability to concoct things.
Well, it's, yeah, it could be all of that. I mean, but even our ability to just be present is amazing, and that I think it opens up so many channels of awareness. I think that the other point that I'm trying to do in this book is to get people out of one-dimensional thinking. So one-dimensional thinking, you mentioned climate change, for example. So you're going to have people on both sides of that issue, for example. Or, you know, how can we broaden out our awareness of any issue or anything, any idea we have about ourselves, so we're not just thinking of it in one way, right? Right or wrong. I love, and I think this book is really, it takes to heart the, there's a phrase that Rumi, the poet Rumi, said that I really love. He said, beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there.
Yeah.
Right? And so how, and so what I'm trying to get people to do is get beyond the field of right and wrong, the field of duality, and it comes in so many different forms. I'm a good person, I'm a bad person, I did, you know, that we get
so many judgments.
Yeah, we get locked in judgments. And so to transcend that.
And how does reflection help us do that?
Well, I think reflection can, it helps us pause, and it stops that habit loop of rumination or anxiety. And it gets you into, a space, because the mind is actually very spacious. It gets you into a space where you're beyond those thoughts, and you can witness all of them, right? But you're creating space from them. And so in a way, you've transcended them. You can notice them. You can be present observing them. But awareness itself is beyond the thoughts. And that is a transcendent space. And I think about in relationships. Wouldn't that be beautiful within your relationships? And I have a section on love and relationships in the book, that you were able to be with somebody and not have to be in a fight, a struggle of right and wrong with them.
God, yeah.
And it is, it's doable. It's real. You can do it. You can cultivate that ability. Imagine how wonderful that would be to be in that space with somebody where you're in a space of love with them and not having to fight, not having to impose your preferences or your ideas or your beliefs on the way you think they should act or the way you think you want things to be.
Right. You know, it occurs to me that the words that you quote the Buddha as having said on his deathbed reflect on this idea of being able to trust yourself and create your own relationship to thoughts. And he said, when he was asked how his teaching should be taught and carried forward, instead of trying to codify his work, he said, be a lamp unto yourself. In other words, use your uniquely human capabilities, which are immense, to illumine and light your own path. So this is really about trusting oneself, right? I mean, reflection sounds like a skill that supports that.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that's a very powerful ability that we have, is to go inward, to trust ourselves. And that's why I call this a path of self-evolution, is that you don't have to have, a guru, somebody outside yourself. It's always great to have a good teacher. But ultimately, there's actually something called the upaguru. It's the principle of the guru within, the light bringer within, the dispeller of darkness within, and accessing that. And that's what I wanted to do with this book, was to give people the means to start to accessing their own light and to light their own path.
You know, it seems like this must be harder than ever because of how many distractions we have. And as you say in the book, if you live on this planet, it's not possible to escape trauma. Well, that's kind of like the Buddhist noble truth, you know, the first noble truth, is that life involves suffering for at least the egocentric life.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, where pain is inevitable, but they say suffering is optional. But I don't think it's very optional for most of us. And it seems like the occasion, you know, our minds are so busy and we're dealing with so much information coming at us and so many different propaganda channels and so many different opinions and scary news, that we need these skills more than ever. Do you think that's true? Do you think we live in an age of anxiety that's worse than it's ever been?
I believe that is so. In fact, just last week, there's something called the Global Emotions Report that came out, and the United States has the third highest level of being unhappy. Mm-hmm. Of all that we have in this country, right, of all that we're blessed with, to think that people were under so much stress and emotional duress that they were very unhappy. I think the number one country in the unhappiness was Chad, which is a war-torn country with a lot of violence, instability, and yet here we are in our country not lagging very far behind them.
Right.
So we need to acknowledge that. And sometimes I think we need to look at what can bring more fulfillment into my life. And really, isn't it the connections we have? Isn't it the people that are in our lives? And if we can, in fact, 9 of the 10 countries that were the happiest were Latin American countries. And there's a fundamental degree of family togetherness. I mean, they don't work like we do here, right? They work from in the morning till like 11. They'll take, you know, 3 or 4 hours off in the middle of the day, or maybe they work until 1 and they don't go back to work until 3 or 4. So it's a different emphasis.
Right.
And I think we need to evaluate not just how to handle the stress that we have, and I think that's the way a lot of people portray mindfulness, and that's why I don't use the word mindfulness in this book even, because I talk about it as the here and now, and presencing, bringing our presence into this moment. And also reflection helps us ask, go beyond just, oh, how can I deal with this stress? And then you become a little mindfulness machine. Look at me, I'm handling the stress better. And I think we need to say, what is the root of this stress? And how can we start to change the conditions so that we can live a better life? You want to have a nice, beautiful flower, you have to nurture it and water it, right? And I think that's the idea here. We want to try to nurture a kinder, more compassionate life and bring that into our workplaces, bring that into our homes.
You know, I think of you as a spiritual teacher. I mean, there's a lot of ways to describe you, but I think of you as a spiritual teacher. And it seems to me that essentially what we're discussing here is a spiritual problem or a spiritual challenge. In other words,
I think so. And I thank you for actually for saying that.
You know, the ego. There's the ego and there's the soul, if you will. And by the soul, I mean that part of our identity that shares in the collective and that's connected to everything that is. And as long as we're coming from the ego, we are going to create suffering because we're never going to be satisfied. We're never going to be fulfilled. We're trying to attain. We're trying to strive. We're trying to chase pleasure and avoid pain. And
it's inevitable.
It's driving people crazy.
Yeah, it's inevitable. that you are constantly craving, because we get habituated to something. You get something new and it makes you feel good in the moment. And then, our systems, need newness, our emotional systems. And so after a while, you're unhappy with that, right? So how can you, for example, gratitude is a wonderful way of saying, hey, I can appreciate what I have. I can recognize that I have enough in my life. And so you can revalue or reappreciate what you already have without having to continually get on that, treadmill, hedonic treadmill, or whatever you want to call it, needing more.
Mm-hmm. You know, that speaks to a word that we've seldom hear touted in our culture, which is contentment.
That is great. Yeah,
the only person I ever hear talk about contentment is the Dalai Lama. And why is that? Why can't we, we're so addicted to the new and shiny that we can't, don't seem to be satisfied with gratitude.
Right. I'm glad you said that, because I actually have a reading in the book of meditation on contentment where I believe I said, don't believe all the press releases about happiness, right? That contentment is a much more supportive, long-lasting, and nourishing companion. So if you can cultivate contentment in your life, in your day, imagine how you stop chasing after things, and you can be more present with that. You could appreciate the ordinary little things that you have in your life. And so I'd invite your readers even to look around right now and look at the ordinary little things that are there for you. And if you can bring appreciation to that, it takes time. Actually, it's interesting. The brain remembers a negative emotion. It will encode it very strongly to protect you against any danger. It takes a lot longer to have the brain wire up the positive emotions and the little ordinary things. So you have to kind of work at it longer.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Because we're programmed for survival.
Right.
You know, and we have to be hyper-vigilant for danger. And now we live these lives where we're not really having to worry about predators coming out of the woods to attack us. But we're very fearful. We have a tendency to latch on to those fearful thoughts or those beliefs, I'll never be happy, or I don't deserve what I want, or whatever they might be.
Right.
And those things have a lot of staying power, which, as you point out in the book, that gratitude actually has scientifically proven benefits.
Absolutely. So gratitude has been shown actually to reduce depression. And a wonderful idea around gratitude. Gratitude comes from the word gratitudo. It's from the ancient mealtime grace, finding what is pleasing at the mealtime.
Uh-huh.
And so gratitude is just a wonderful way of, it's been shown to, when you're having gratitude, you're participating in the world. You're actually noticing and connecting with what is out there. You're feeling grateful for something others have done. It connects people. So gratitude makes you, helps you connect better with people. It helps you feel better. It actually increases your positive well-being and affect. So it, it just is a wonderful tool. I've seen some people have some dramatic changes in their life when they, connected with gratitude.
You know, you talk about, you know, get off the happiness treadmill and find true peace and contentment. And I love that. You know, and you say contentment is knowing that everything is okay and that enough is really enough. But we have this tendency to compare ourselves and compare what we have or what we've accomplished with other people. And I love this tidbit that from your book, reflect. Things get easier when you stop worrying about what others think. And then you go on to say, have you met any accurate mind readers? And yet we keep trying to read minds as if we know what other people think.
Right, yeah.
Yes, you can think about the musings and opinions of others, or you can learn to let it be, a process which usually takes a couple hundred years. That's not very encouraging,
right.
Donald.
Well, all the more reason, I think, for us to stop mind reading.
Yeah, we should start now.
Might as well start now.
And, well, we're just about out of time, but I want to ask this last question. You say something about rewiring the brain for resilience, and I'm wondering, can someone's brain really be rewired through reflection? It seems like it would take forever.
Well, yeah, we do actually just a few minutes a day. If you're reflecting, if you're using this book just a few minutes a day, you're changing the architecture, inner architecture of your brain, even in subtle ways. And it's been shown, even in terms of MRIs that they've done, that even a few minutes a day can make substantive changes in the neural network. So you're changing yourself from the inside out.
It's beautiful. You know, you talk, one quote from the book is, live in the what is, not the what if.
Right.
And that's about being in the present, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, and there's so much more that we could explore about this book, Reflect, simply titled Reflect, Awaken to the Wisdom of the Here and Now by Donald Altman. And it's a beautiful book, too. It's really cute. I think people are really going to like it. And I want to thank you, Donald, for being on the show. There's so much we could explore, but we've basically run out of time.
Yeah, well, thank you, Paul. Again, thank you very much, and I hope that your audience can benefit from our talk today.
And let's be sure to tell our listeners about your website. Which website would you like to promote?
Well, you can go to my Facebook page, and all you'll do is if you typed from Facebook, if you went to it's facebook.com mindfulness, and that's without the I, MNDFULNESS. We're taking the I out of mindfulness.
So facebook.com/mindfulness
without the I.
Okay, fantastic. And you also have mindfulpractices.com.
Yeah, mindfulpractices.com is my regular website, and people can sign up for my newsletter.
Okay, beautiful. Well, thank you very much. And for those who tuned in to Pathways Show, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of the book Great Decisions, Perfect Timing, soon to be republished as Intuitive Intelligence by Beyond Words. It's a book that shares the theme of Pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. In a second, I'll tell you how you can rewind and replay this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast. Today, we've been visiting with Donald Altman, author of 15 books, including Reflect, Awaken to the Wisdom of the Here and Now. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed via KBOO.fm Sunday mornings at 8:30 USA Pacific Time. Podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com, spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes and other free podcast servers. This is Paul O'Brien, reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and podcasts. And thanks again to Donald Altman and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.